Let's move now from post-war housing to the economy, which was marred by high unemployment and rising living costs. Certain companies, such as Guinness, kept jobs open for people at work. But what about the other companies, Edward? What impact did being a veteran have on your chances of finding work?
Well, I think we've mentioned this already, but in certain cases, and Gabe Byrne's father is one of them, he wasn't someone who'd worked in the Guinness Brewery before the war, so the job wasn't kept open. And yet, being a veteran of the Great War definitely helped his chances of getting a job there, and he worked in the Guinness Brewery for the rest of his life. So it's important to remember that it wasn't simply your job being left open, which happened in Britain too, but actually, whether you had nothing to do with the brewery or the company before the war, certain companies, and indeed certain parts of the civil service, welcomed you because you'd been a veteran. And that wasn't everyone's experience. Tens of thousands of Irishmen emigrated to North America after the war. That was a more common experience. But certainly for certain individuals, be they former officers or rank and file soldiers, their chances of getting employed were improved by the fact that they'd served in the Great War.
And how about the civil service party? How did the civil service treat its ex-servicemen?
Well, as I say, there was preference given to ex-servicemen and scholarships given. Again, a few figures in. There were 482 servicemen taken on by the Department of Agriculture and Technical Instruction. As Edward was saying, it did improve your chances in some employments. There was small print in the thing when people went away. People like Guinness's and Irish Distillers encouraged men to join the British Army because they're being taxed out of existence. They had to have layoffs anyway. In fact, Irish Distillers ended up being converted completely to industrial alcohol production. They were banned from making whiskey because Lloyd George didn't want them making whiskey. It wasn't going to help win the war, whatever they may have thought about it. But licensing laws, as we know, were dramatically draconian.
The round system was banned. Treating was banned.
No, but I mean, opening hours were drastically cut.
In fact, the quality of the beer was greatly reduced. There's a wonderful song called Lloyd George's Beer, which is about how weak it was.
The beer. But even it was so bad that not only were civilians not supposed to go in these places, soldiers were banned, and even policemen were banned from going into pubs to enforce the licensing laws. So it shows you how serious the problem was. So a lot of these men were told by Guinness or Irish Distillers or whoever, look, you joined the British Army, we'll keep your job open. You kept your pension entitlements, you kept your service increments, all that stuff was intact. The only small print said usually that if you get your job back, if you're fit to do it. As Edda said already, people were gassed, people were seriously injured and so on. The other problem was, of course, that all jobs weren't kept open things changed after the war. For example, in Belfast, which had a massive war industry, building mainly standard ships rather than warships, that all stopped when the war ended. So men were coming back from the front and they didn't actually have a job to go back to. And often the job they had been doing was being done by a Catholic. And certainly one of the factors in the pogroms in 1920 was the fact that there were Protestant loyalists who'd come back from fighting for their country and they'd be replaced by Tags who would weren't even loyal to the crown. So that was a very important factor. In Dublin, again, women got a lot of work, munitions workers in particular, were very well paid, and separation women were also very well paid. The second largest group in the Dublin tenements by income category were separation women. Biggest were general labourers. These women all lost those allowances once their men came back from the war. Those men often didn't have a job to go back into. So poverty hit fairly quickly. There was a post-war boom that ran out early 1921. From 1921 onwards, it's a tale of misery and woe, and all the social inequalities start going the other way again. During the war, life expectancy actually improved, which I think is a fairly good indicator that life is getting better for people.
In some parts of Northern Ireland, employment for ex-servicemen failed to materialise and people soon discovered that claiming a military pension could be an administrative nightmare, as Elizabeth Rice reports from Belfast.
By around 1920, a work scheme had been put in place for the returning soldiers, but it was a far cry from the promised country fit for heroes. Cathal Donaghy.
When the war was over then, there was no work as such. Following the war, when you had the outdoor relief scheme started, for to give them work. And what they were doing was making roads and so on. The wages, of course, were terrible. And it was the only time, I think, in our history that the two communities, both Catholic and Protestant, loyalist or Republican or nationalist, came together on a general strike, and it's documented. There's thousands of them down in the centre of Belfast demonstrating against the conditions that they were under. There was just no work at all.
The military pensions were also a problem. Each man had to be assessed, and it could take up to 2 years before the money came through. Some of the exemptions for pensions put in place by the military were unbelievable. Siobhan Brennan.
One of the people I spoke to told me that his father remembers nursing his own father who had survived World War One and had an ankle injury. He had to clean his wounds every day, and the father could not work properly because of the ankle wound. He said he could put fingers inside the wound. And he died of ill health, probably lung disease or whatever it was. But he died, and the wife and children were destitute because he didn't marry until he came back from the war, and his dependents weren't entitled to any pension or allowances.
Presumably, Edward, veterans elsewhere in the country, it wasn't just in Northern Ireland, veterans elsewhere in the country ran into similar levels of bureaucracy.
They did. I mean, it's complex, and you know, we should remember that men have to readjust to civilian life when they come back from a horrific war and the experience of industrialised killing on a sort of a personal and domestic level. But they also have to deal with bureaucracy, which can be maddening. I would say that the experiences of men in Dublin and Limerick and other cities in what became the Free State would mirror those in Belfast.
And what kind of financial support was there, if any, for soldiers who had fought in the war?
You got 6 months unemployment benefit, really. And same applied to women, in fairness, the British government. The VADs, the voluntary aid detachments, mainly nurses, got the same. So if you left the army, you got an ongoing payment for 6 months if you didn't find work. But interesting, now, I was doing some of the Vincent de Paul congregations reports after the war, and one of the biggest claimant groups are men trying to get their pensions or get their war entitlements, whatever they were, invalidity and so on. And the Vincent de Paul actually put a lot of effort into getting these men their entitlements. So it was certainly a huge problem. Another thing was actually the trade unions were a problem because towards the end of the war, a lot of Dubliners joining the British Army realised they were volunteers, so you could pick and choose where you went. So if you're a youngster in Dublin and someone tells you, join the Flying Corps because you'll be a maintenance crew, you'll learn to be a fitter or motor mechanic or something, and you'll get a job when you came out. And so increasingly recruitment in Ireland went towards those sort of areas away from the front line. It meant then some unfortunate Brit who was conscripted had to go into the front line while some Irish guy got the cushy number. But the trouble was when you came back from the war, the British Army was not a recognised house for apprentices. So if you went to the National Union of Sheet Metal Workers or the Engineering Union and said, I'm a fitter, I'm a welder, they'd say you get lost. They'd say you're a general labourer.